Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton. I'm Travis, and I'm here with the number one cam girl in North Korea, Kyle. Kyle, this week the Bears made it to 6-3. Nope, it doesn't. We don't need to give any context.
Just run with the inside joke.
Straight to 6-3 with the Bears, and that has nothing to do with North Korea, except for the state of our defense, Kyle. But we still pulled out the win thanks to one man, not Kim Jong-un, Caleb Williams.
Do you have any I don't know if I would compare the Bears defense to North Korea, because I do. I mean, I don't know. I don't think you got to hand it to North Korea on a lot, but I do think they've got like border security kind of locked down as a thing. Like, I feel like that's like the one thing that they've got. So you got
to
hand it to that.
You're saying we need to make our end zone more like North Korea on game day.
Absolutely.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah, 6-3. We're celebrating our sixth victory pod of the year. That's one more than we got all of last year. So,
Jesus.
You know, that's a good feeling, right? That's a good feeling. But that's a good feeling.
Yeah. I've got a feeling that today is a good day.
Okay, that's the worst Black Eyed Peas riff, I think.
Was at least twice as good as Fergie, as anything Fergie has ever done in her entire life.
Okay, right. But yeah, no, we had a big come from behind victory over the New York Football Giants. They came so hard it got Brian Daboll fired. So, yeah, Caleb Williams getting another head coach fired. Travis, how do you feel about that?
That's what we like to do, man. We get coach scalps. We like to hang them on the mantle,
hang them on the wall.
You know, I look forward to the day when losing to the Bears is not like an automatic firing for coaches on the hot seat.
Shameful, you must be fired for this disgrace. Yeah, I hope the reason that Daboll got fired had less to do with their win loss record and more just to do with the fact that like someone has to save Jackson Dart from that man. And I'll say this: we were not super positive on Jackson Dart the last time that we discussed him on here. And you know, caveat here is that the Bears defense is clearly not very good at the moment, but Jackson Dart did some stuff in this game that I didn't think he had in his bag.
He has a ton of talent.
There was some under center stuff. There was some middle of the field stuff. There were some deep balls with timing and anticipation.
This is the thing. And then, you know, we always talk about these Ole Miss quarterbacks. They're just mystery boxes. We don't know.
You just don't like. Yeah, I mean, it's that is always the and it's only going to become. And I've talked about this because we spend so much time projecting quarterbacks as our part of our offseason stuff and everything, but like it's only going to get harder because the Lane Kiffins ain't going away. You know, these zoomer ball quarterbacks, these offenses are going to get harder. And so it's just a question of like, can a guy do stuff that he wasn't even asked to do in college? And it's hard to tell. So yeah, I mean, I was impressed by Dart in that game. I hope that with Daboll out of the way, without the need for Daboll to try to save his job, Mike Kafka, I think the interim head coach, they just try to develop the kid as a quarterback and quit using him as a battering ram. Now, I mean, maybe when he has to run more true drop back stuff, maybe it will expose some of the weaknesses in his game and you'll understand why they were mostly doing RPO QB run bullshit. But like, I don't know. The Jackson Dart that I saw against the Bears yesterday was not the same Jackson Dart that, you know, you saw against the Chargers and even the Saints in those first two starts he had, which, I mean, he shouldn't be at this stage. He should be improving. But yeah, I mean, if you're a Giants fan, I think you got to be kind of excited about what you got in quarterback right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. But like we're not Giants fans. Even against bad Bears defense.
He did what he was supposed to do, man.
Ooh, that pass over Noah Sewell. I didn't think he'd ever be able to do that.
Absolutely. So kudos to him. And, you know, if you want to talk about, but we're not Giants fans, but we are excited about our quarterback, Travis. Caleb Williams, is he inevitable?
I can tell you that he is the guy, capital T, capital G.
Oh, you planting your flag now, huh? This is it? This is the Skycast episode where Travis Edward Franks sits here and says, hey, we have the guy. He's arrived. Is this your moment?
That's right. Using my slave middle name. Jeez. Dead naming my middle name.
I forgot you changed it. My bad.
That's right. It's actually not my middle name. All right. So, yeah, I said,
if you want, you can throw my middle name at me. Give the people what they want. Go ahead.
You know, I like your middle name. I like your middle name too much to do that. All right, it's okay. A good middle name. It's strong. We are having too much fun right now. I'm going to get on track, Kyle. All right. I said start of the year, 2022 Lions. This is what it's going to look like. I'm going to give them 8 games. That 9th game, I expect him to be on, right? I expect him to be cooking. I expect the Ben Johnson stuff to work. After that point, I'm going to give a lot less leeway to Caleb and the offense as a whole. Wouldn't you know it? The 9th game, Caleb has his best game, in my opinion, of his career. He was on the whole day. 7 drops. I think 6 were counted officially. I counted 7. I'm betting that the DJ Moore drop in the end zone, where he didn't even manage to get 1 foot in bounds, just an absolute catastrophe from him on that play. I'm guessing they didn't count that one, but either way, he was dealing with a ton of drops. He was dealing with the weather. He was dealing with a run game that wasn't working. He was dealing with a defense that was keeping his offense off the field really successfully. This defense is getting run on, and it's just given him less time to work with. And despite all of that, this game was 20-10 Giants in the 4th quarter. Caleb rolled to his left on a play-action fake, took a beautiful depth to get away from a defensive end, something Justin Fields never learned in his entire goddamn life. It's getting some depth so he doesn't get posterized by a defensive end. And then he threw slightly across his body to Colston Loveland for about 20 yards. And at that point, everyone in the stadium, everyone, including the Giants sideline and the Bears sideline and everybody at home, had the same thought. And for the first time in our fucking lives, Kyle, it was, oh God, the Bears are going to win this game. And it's exactly what happened. They went down the field. They scored a touchdown. Jaquan Brisker, I think, was losing his mind so obviously on the sideline from right after that pass that it lifted this entire team. Like, you could just tell, I think it was Kelvin Byard after the game, who he was just so confident. He was like, you know, we know if the game is close in the 4th quarter, as long as we get the ball back to Caleb, we're going to win. What a thing to say about a Bears quarterback.
I see the power of belief.
Damn right.
Yeah. No, it's funny because people have obviously they've harped on the drops and stuff. And that's important. It's really funny because, you know, all the freak out for Caleb's accuracy at the beginning of the year. And it's funny because the completion percentage has actually only gone down. couple of weeks. And so I think there's, you know, probably some people, and people equate completion percentage with accuracy, so there's probably some nerves. But, like, over the last 3 weeks, Caleb's adjusted completion percentage, folks, is 77%. Like, the bad throws, the misfires that we were seeing earlier, those have mostly over the last couple of weeks kind of petered out. He's settled in. He was on one against the Giants. His receivers were letting him. And to be fair to the receivers, even though I certainly didn't feel like being fair to him yesterday. But, like, it is cold, and he was forced to throw, you know, JT O'Sullivan, you know, mostly pretty positive on Caleb, as he usually is. But he did say he kind of put a couple of those throws on the run. He talked about how, you know, Caleb could have a little too hot. Accuracy is a little off because he was a little hot. I think it's important to remember that, you know, there's a 40-mile-per-hour wind gust. They weren't calling a lot of, like, lob passes. Like, Caleb was putting mustard on the ball because that's what you do when there's a 40-mile-per-hour crosswind. So it wasn't an easy day for the receivers. But, yeah, I mean, the accuracy has actually settled in. You're seeing the plays in the clutch. You're seeing the sack avoidance remains just truly insanely elite. I mean, he must have avoided at least 5. Like, that is a game where I think not even a – Justin Fields takes 10 sacks, but I just think even just like a normal – I'm not sure – I think Jordan Love maybe, who I think is normally a pretty good quarterback at avoiding sacks, I think he takes 4 or 5 sacks in that game. But Caleb just kept getting out of it, kept making plays.
This was the week. I feel like we've been talking about it every week. Like, holy shit, I can't believe how good he is at avoiding sacks. You know, this was our big concern coming into the season. You especially were like, God, I just hope that those sacks – are like 20% less, 30% less than last year, you know? Like, maybe I can tolerate 40 a year if he's very good. And instead, he's become the best in the league at evading pressure.
Right, I was thinking...
not taking set. What happened?
I was thinking he would do like a Kyler Murray, where I think Kyler went from like... hold on, let me pull it up real quick. Because, you know, I like to...
While you're looking, I was going to say, this is the week that everybody else noticed. It felt like everybody is now pointing at it.
Yeah, saying, I mean,
this guy is Houdini.
The worm is really turning in terms of Caleb's public perception.
That winning, worm. I was going to say it, but I didn't want to say it again.
But winning... Okay, so Kyler... Kyler had like an 8% sack rate as a rookie. Caleb was like 10%. And then he cut that down. For his career, it's 6.2, which I think is right around league average or a little bit higher. I guess actually I was more thinking of like an Aaron Rodgers too. Like I always thought Caleb would be one of those guys that we would say like, yeah, he takes, or even a Russell Wilson where it's like, yeah, he takes a fair amount of sacks. But the trade-off is explosive, but there's not even a trade-off here. He just has stopped taking sacks. He yeah. just decided that he's not interested in doing that anymore. And I do think if there was any criticism out of that game, JT O'Sullivan pointed out a couple of them, and I noticed it too. There were, I'd say about two, maybe three plays where Caleb, I think, was very aware that he had Theo Benedict matched up against Abdul Carter on his left. And there were a couple that he played it a tick too fast, broke the pocket, maybe a tick too fast, didn't let stuff develop downfield. I'm not super concerned about that. I think I was talking to a couple people in our Discord about this. I think Bears fans get Fields trauma where it's like, oh, you didn't see this downfield. And it's like, oh my God, he's not seeing it. It's like, no, guys. Like Josh Allen gets sped up sometimes. Patrick Mahomes has been, but that is what a good pass rush does. Even against good quarterbacks, it will occasionally make you give up on a play just a bit too soon because you feel that rush. And I think for all things considered, and Darnell, like he's got the highlight reel block against Brian Burns that's going around. I thought Darnell held his own, but Burns got him a couple times too. Caleb escaped, but I think Darnell gave up at least two or three. And then Theo gave up about five. So Caleb was feeling that a little bit, but you know, it's one of those things. And Kurt Warner gave him credit for this too. You know, even if you are wrong, if you leave just a tick too early, you can still make it right. And Caleb did a good job of that too. And like, okay, I didn't let that play develop, but I got the scramble for the first down, or I managed to hit a different guy on the scramble throw. But yeah, no, it was, I don't know if I thought that was the best game of his career. It was pretty damn, pretty fucking good. And yeah, I mean, it's schedule gets tougher from here. Defenses get tougher from here. There will probably be some bad games in this mix at some point, but I do think, yeah, he's getting more comfortable.
There always will be. Look at what happened to Josh Allen and the Bills this weekend. 30-13 to the Dolphins. He's fumbling all over the place. He can't get anything going. It just happens.
Yeah.
Like, but, you know, yeah, even good quarterbacks, folks, they have bad days. But I think Caleb at this point has shown he is a good quarterback.
Yeah, he's – well, and yeah, just, you know, to do my favorite updates, to, you know, right now Pro Football Focus, among all quarterbacks with at least 150 dropbacks, he is ninth overall. And we know we love adjusted net yards per attempt. He's 11th in that. He is 11th in just regular net yards per attempt, which does not do the touchdown slat and interception adjustments. I don't know why some people would insist on doing that. I think touchdowns and interceptions matter personally, but I've had some people say, Caleb Zania as a rookie was only good because of his touchdown interception ratio, but he actually really wasn't that good throwing the ball. But okay, fine. Well, here we are this year. He's 11th in net yards per attempt. He's 11th in adjusted net yards per attempt. He's 10th overall in drop back EPA. I got into a lovely argument just last week with Twitter's favorite analytics, he calls himself an analytics nerd. He's a disgrace to analytics. The man is the worst kind of analytics nerd who just believes blindly in numbers even though they change every week. Ben Baldwin was saying he didn't understand why Caleb was talked about so much more positively than Penix and Nix, and he cited their EPA per play being in the ballpark. But like, I don't know if people realize that EPA per play includes penalties. So like, Caleb is currently the sin eater for all of those offensive penalties.
Hell yeah.
That the Bears have committed, him and Trevor Lawrence. And it also includes designed rushes, which I'm not saying designed rushes aren't something that quarterbacks can be good at. But in Caleb's case, he really hasn't had that many designed rushes. And most of the ones that he has had are sneaks, and those have mostly all failed. And sneaks are very high leverage plays generally. So one failed sneak, like he's lost negative 10 EPA this year on sneaks, just sneaks. And I'm not saying those didn't matter. I'm not saying that the EPA per play is inadequate or is inaccurate. I'm just saying that that's not very... You shouldn't be projecting a guy's future performance based off of quarterback sneaks, is what I'm saying. So, his EPA per dropback, which isn't just passes, it's pass attempts, sacks, scrambles, is 10th in the NFL. So on a per dropback basis, you're talking the 10th, 11th, 12th best quarterback, depending on what metric you want to use. PFF's got him 9th. Like, this is, and this is after the first half in this new, very complicated offense. Now, the schedule does get tougher, I feel like, in terms of results. You know, he may not even get quite the same results on the stat sheet, but I do think going forward, you know, he will just continue to improve in this system, get more comfortable in this system. But yeah, fantastic from Caleb Williams. They don't win that game without Caleb Williams. They tried to lose, everybody but Caleb Williams kind of sold it at one point and tried to lose that game, and he just refused to let them. But yeah, I mean, just to get, you know, romantic about football, to get corny for a second, like that's what happens sometimes when you have one of those guys. And I think we have one of those guys.
Yeah. It's crazy because I have all this praise for Caleb, but I have a lot of shit to talk. Like, I mean, of the rest of the guys, I can say had an unequivocally good day. We could talk about Luther Burden. I think we could talk about all but one play from Roma Dunze.
Yeah. And even Rome, like his drop was the least. Rome's drop was the least drops, sure, of the drops, because Caleb could have put a slightly better ball, but it's still, that's a play you'd like Roma Dunze to make. I think it's a play Roma Dunze would tell you he could make. But yeah, I'll spare Rome. But yeah, no, it's funny because we've had some of these wins lately, you know, especially a couple weeks ago. It was like the Saints game, the Commanders game. You were like, I wish we could spend less time talking about Caleb, and I'd like to talk about all these other guys that are contributing, blah, blah, blah. And then this week it's like, it's pretty much just Caleb.
Yep. This was all Caleb, dude. This like, is Caleb. Nobody
this
else.
This was the Caleb Williams win. The rest of you, please line up and take your bitching. I feel like I collectively owe the people of our community an apology. I owe you an apology. I maybe shouldn't have vouched for Alameda Zaccheaus.
Yep.
He's been real bad, and it sucks because I do think, you know, by PFF grade, this is like the worst of his career. By drop rate, this is the worst of his career. I think, you know, especially with these marginal guys, these undrafted guys, you know, a lot of times they have 4 or 5 good years in them. And because they're already guys who are just maxing their skill sets from the beginning, there's nowhere to go but down. And I think he's just one of those guys that we maybe got just 1 year too late, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Like, as much as I would love to excoriate you and be like, he's terrible, he's trash, this is not what he's looked like for the majority of his career. And you would think, you know, he would get into this system and he has such a role, and he's probably so excited coming into this year, like, wow, now I can really show what I've got. Like, I had all this good production and a limited role in these other places, but here I could really flourish. And he cannot catch the fucking ball to save his life. He cannot get open. He goes down the second he touches a ball.
And he consistently on those option routes, there was a 3rd and 4, just consistently just makes like just runs into coverage like that 3rd and 4, like it was just past his hands. And I'm sure there are people like, another inaccurate throw from Caleb, but you could very clearly, like, you could see, if you watch the play, you can see exactly what Caleb sees, which is like it's this hell shit. I love to run this play in Madden. It's the option route to the sideline is my favorite route in all of Madden. I pretty much hot route a guy to do that on every play. And it's like, there's all the space in the world towards the sideline, just move that way. And Oz, kind of like DJ did against Baltimore, was like, you know, I'm just going to stay right here in this one spot where I'm covered. And Caleb is like seeing the open grass and throwing towards the open grass. It's really just, it's a bummer, man.
It's wild to see guys look at a corner and notice that they have inside leverage so often and just be like, you know what? I'm running inside. I'm going to let him give me a big old fucking hug. That's what I'm doing. Like, I'm definitely not going to run to the right, which is the correct option. And I have the choice to do that. My quarterback's probably going to assume I'm going that way. We're going inside. All right. It's cold. I need the warmth. Like you said, DJ did the same thing against the Ravens. We want to talk about running into coverage. DJ Moore is the king of running into coverage. That guy is not getting open. And he did something very similar. I think the pass that looked the worst from Caleb on the day when you watched it live was to DJ Moore. It was maybe 15, 20 yards downfield down the right sideline. And he's running across the field and he's run into the sideline, and the whole route he is running flat, right? He is running more towards Caleb. And then all of a sudden, as Caleb throws the ball, he decides to like float downfield instead of just continuing the way he was going. Now, the way he was going was open. It like just an easy completion. But by going downfield, he literally runs behind a defender. Yeah, he steps behind the defender.
Yeah.
And Caleb, which he's done a couple times this year, as he's throwing the ball, he sees that DJ has fucked it. And he dirts the ball. So the pass looks terrible.
It's funny because I think DJ Moore really is just like the wide receiver version of DeAndre Swift, where it's just like you don't have instincts. Like it's just every time there's, I mean, it's really funny, you know, it's a running joke in our friend group that anytime I have a 50-50 choice in terms of like direction, like which way to go on a street or whatever, I somehow defy conventional logic and I choose the wrong one every time. DJ Moore is kind of that way. Every time there's a chance to like, if he needs to go inside, he goes outside. If he needs to come back, he goes out. He just is so wrong every time. And I think we've, you know, JT O'Sullivan, the phrase he keeps saying is he's a hard guy to throw the ball to. And he's not talking about like his hands or it's just, he makes it hard to throw him the ball because he just doesn't do things to get open. And I think, you know, people are like, well, he's, but look at his numbers and everything before Caleb. And it's like, that's because he is the kind of wide receiver that I think excels in a bad offense where he's the only option with a quarterback who's not really trying to read things out or play within structure. You know, because you run him on slants, you run him on curls, and you run him vertical, and you get a quarterback who just basically waits for DJ to get open, and that's the kind of stuff that he does, you know. He's just not a precise route runner, and he's not a guy who makes the right choice on these option routes in Ben's offense. And you know, in week two when we were complaining about DJ, it was very much about his effort, and Ben I think sent a clear message on that. Now I'll give him DJ credit, like he's hustling out there. And he's trying to run block, although he fucked up the third and one toss play that ended up being a fourth and four.
Jordan Love is so stupid. I'm sorry. We're watching.
No, I saw the same thing. That was incredible.
Oh my God. Jordan Love. This is an what a awful fumble. Football game.
What a fumble.
Holy shit.
It's pretty great. It's a slop fest, all right.
No, Jordan. Jordan
Love, I almost feel bad for Jordan Love because like he's really cut down on the number of turnovers. But he just is one of those guys. It's kind of like Tony Romo, where like Romo, you'd look at the end of the year and he'd only had like 8 interceptions. Yeah. But every single one of them was the single dumbest interception you've ever seen in your life.
Like really like highlight reel interceptions.
Yeah. I feel like that's Jordan Love. He never makes a normal turnover. It's always got to be like, why? Why did you do that?
Boy. But we don't have a guy like that. That's for sure.
No, of course not. Anyways, but yeah, no, DJ just, he's not an instinctual player. He's not a guy. I don't know. We've said it before on here. If I were a Bears fan, which I am, but if I were you, Bears fan listening to this, I would just prepare yourself for a world without DJ Moore next year. And that's kind of the problem is that like, obvious from this game and obvious from Ben Johnson's quotes and stuff that like, we're going to see more Luther Burden going forward. But the problem is that I think we're all picturing Luther Burden as the Zacchaeus replacement, but I think he's the DJ Moore replacement. I don't know that he's really ready for the Oz routes and the Oz responsibilities. So I don't know. It's tough. It's tough out there. He, like I said, like JT says, he makes it hard to throw him the ball. He's just not a guy that you can have a ton of trust in.
He does. And yeah, I think you're right. I think Luther Burden is going to be out there doing the DJ stuff. But man, every snap that Luther Burden is on the field, he is working his ass off.
That separation he got on that fucking ball on that last drive.
Yeah.
The separation he got on that route. And then also Caleb to anticipate that and fire that ball. Did you see, which first of all, good job on Burden for catching that ball. Feels like something I need to call out. But did you see how Burden was like basically surprised that the ball was there? Yeah. He was like, holy shit.
Yeah. Because
the kid just, I mean, he pinned that, Caleb pinned that one on him.
Caleb seems to be recognizing, like, if Luther Burden is on the field and that's my first read, I bet he's fucking open. Like, I bet I can rip this ball right at him.
Yeah,
and
there were some real nice.
I like Rome, and as much as I like Colston Loveland, because he had some good stuff going this game as well, man, Luther Burden might be the best wide receiver we've got on this team. He is special.
I'd like to see him take on a bigger role and handle some more responsibilities before I can say something like that, because Rome is playing some really good football.
He is. He's playing fantastic. No shade to Rome at all.
I think there is a strong, the future triplet core of this team is very much Rome, Burden, and Colston Loveland. It's only a matter of time, really, before basically 66%, I would bet, of the target share is just those three guys. But yeah, no, I guess I do want to single out one other player for playing well, actually, in this game. And you mentioned him earlier, but CJ Gardner-Johnson had a game. He really did. I'm kind of excited to see. I think we've got one more week, and they swore Kyler was supposed to be back right after he was eligible to return this time. We'll see. But
I'm kind of
interested to see what Dennis Allen might do with Kyler and CJ both available to him. I feel like there's some goon shit that he could be doing with that. But yeah, GJ was the standout player on the defense. I also Austin Booker had 5 pressures in this game. That led the team. And he was going up against Andrew Thomas, who's a very good left tackle. For most of it. So I thought that was a pretty good game for Austin Booker. And then I should say the 3 interior offensive linemen for a pretty tough assignment, drawing big man Dexter Lawrence, Jonah Jackson, Dahlman, Tooney, all 3 of them played a very good ball game, I thought. So that's all the good that I've got there.
Yeah, no, I would agree. Like, CJ Gardner-Johnson is a guy, and we had some questions in the Discord, like, what is the deal with this guy? Like, he has such a reputation, and it really is just, he's kind of like the Joakim Noah of the NFL. You know, you love him when he's on your team, everybody else universally hates him because he talks an insane amount of shit, right? He's always up in guys' faces. Well, the beautiful thing about that is, the Bears have Jaquan Brisker and Tyreek Stevenson, like, shit talkers du jour. So those guys probably get along swimmingly. And B, you know, CJ Gardner-Johnson was obviously drafted by the Saints, been coached by Dennis Allen before. Those guys seem to have a mutual love and respect for each other. And he, like, CJ was, like, fairly emotional after the game, I would say. Like, he was grateful to be on this team. He seems to really love the locker room and get along with the guys. Obviously, he loves the coach there. So I wonder the same thing about Kyler Gordon, because Ben Johnson made a remark about Kyler Gordon, which maybe he didn't intend it to be as incendiary as it was, but somebody, a reporter asked him.
When he said he's like, I haven't been able to be around Kyler very long.
Yeah, he asked him, like, does he bring the kind of fire and intensity that Kyler does? And Ben said, you know what? I haven't been able to talk to Kyler much because he's always hurt. Like, he's barely ever in the room. And yeah,
Yeah, I think that was Ben just being very matter of fact about things. But I was like, I mean,
that's bad news, Spider-Man.
So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens when Kyler gets back and how they use them both. God knows they could use them both. And I believe they have Asante Samuel Jr. coming in for a visit tomorrow, so that could be really interesting if they decide to make a signing there. Maybe shore up the secondary a little bit. God knows they need it.
Kyler, we're paying you a lot of money. Get your ass on the outside. Let's see if you can cover some people better than Nashon Wright. Huh?
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see. I guess the only other thing... Or I guess way ago, I was trying to start a lot of people mentioned the drops. That's true. But I also feel like people are kind of ignoring that they just couldn't kick in this game, because there were like 4 drives in the game that would normally be field goals and would have added to the Bears points total. And they just had to go for it. And I think that also maybe has warped perspective a little bit of how messy that game was, because I think if they had just consistently gotten points on those drives, like they would have in normal time, people would have had more appreciation for the game Caleb was playing too, because they basically got in normal scoring range on every single drive all game long. They just couldn't score because the field goals weren't an option. And I do think, I mean, it's okay. I think you guys have to be honest with yourselves and cut Cairo Santos at some point if you're not even willing to consider some of those kicks with him as your kicker. Like, because I mean, you're in Chicago. You're hoping to make the playoffs this year. You're not going to let him even attempt to kick in that weather, but you're going to tell me come January, you think this guy can kick pivotal field goals for you?
Yeah, and it's a combination of things. Like, yeah, first of all, okay, so you have Cairo Santos, you're just not going to kick these field goals. But B, now you're in these fourth and shorts, and man, a big weakness of this team right now is getting into these short yardage situations or situations where the field is kind of scrunched up, you know, down near the goal line, right? Like within those 3 or 4 yards, and the play calling, or maybe the play design, or maybe it's just been how they've been run. Something about that is rotten right now. It is not working, and it has been a consistent issue for this team. We cannot get those yards. So when you combine all of that stuff together, you're just giving away possessions at this point, right? Like we punted from inside the 50 twice. One time Torrey Taylor was punting from like the 36 and kicking it so that the Giants would fair catch it.
He's pretty used to that, though, let's be honest.
Now, this is a thing I wanted to point out, because that is not what Kirk Ferentz does. Kirk is a prolific fourth down go-for-it guy, right? Because he knows you don't punt from those yards. And Ben Johnson should know that as well. But Ben was looking at this realistically, because what have we not been able to do all season up to this point? Is get this 4th and 2, this 3rd and 3, this 3rd and goal from the 3, this 4th and goal from the 2 or whatever. For whatever reason, that stuff is not working great right now. So if there's one issue we've got on this offense consistently, I'm looking at. I want to see better play calling, and I want to see maybe Ben just also admit that the run game ain't it, buddy. Like, you can't rely on those guys right now.
It's tough because, like, it really does, like, establish the run ball. But, like, it really does, like, to play the Ben Johnson style of football, there really does have to be a commitment to establishing the run. And he wants it to be kind of automatic like it was for him in Detroit. But, like, it looks real ugly when it doesn't work. And I would like to see the pass rate over expected, especially in the red zone, go back up a little bit. Let Caleb throw on some of those early downs down in the red zone, because it's not automatic right now.
Yeah.
And I do believe that if you let Caleb throw the ball more on early downs in the red zone, you'll get touchdowns. Oh. Notably their first touchdown.
How about that one where we kicked the field goal to bring it to 20-10, Kyle? How about the sequence of plays that they ran? Did that remind you of Ben Johnson's mentor at all? The run fade route that's never going to work in a million
the
years.
Well, to be fair to him on the fade route, that was an RPO. That was, I think Caleb, the look was there. Caleb was going to hand it off, but then the snap was high.
Yeah.
And that fucked the timing of the run. So then Caleb had to throw the fade, which obviously never had a chance to tell. But yeah, I mean, that goes to show that also I would not have chosen to run the damn RPO right there either. So I would have and it was nice that, you know, when they on the 2 must have drives at the end, he just really did open it up and just, you know, tell Caleb to go be a quarterback. So I hope there's a lesson in that for, and Ben Johnson even admitted that was not his best game, literally said he never got really good rhythm for it. And he's been so vocal about his praise of Caleb and the pressure that Caleb takes off of him, and how, you know, he's said so many times, like, I don't feel like I have to be perfect. I have to get the first read open. I trust that he will get us out of bad plays, that he will make us right. I would like him to learn from that. Like, you know, give Caleb a chance to make you right, at least. Like, you know, go. They did some more empty stuff on those last 2 drives. You know, go empty in the red zone a couple times. Let him, he can get it with his legs. He can get it with his arms. That is one thing I'd like to see going forward in the games. You know, when we get into the red zone, just let him, you know, let him take some chances with his arms.
Yeah, I mean, I love what Caleb has done. I think there are a couple things I want to see from Caleb the second half of the season. One is there's a route that it feels like they've been avoiding because Caleb has screwed it up badly a couple of times. And that's simply that quick hit slant over the middle that is not right now in the playbook. I haven't seen that route in 3 weeks. And I think the last time I saw it is Oh God, it was that horrible miss to Rome over the middle that was ended up being quite dangerous. Didn't it fell harmlessly to the ground, but it looked pretty bad. I'd like to see him complete a couple of those because that
the
is
glance route. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's a huge route, especially in Ben's offense. I think also I don't think he's avoiding this particular pass. I think the issue is that his left tackle is a concept at this point. By the way, Bears left tackles overall this season have allowed more pressures than any other left tackle position in the NFL. Yet overall, our offensive line is in the top 10 right now as far as pass block win rate. So it's a really weird offensive line.
One massive black hole and four very solid spots.
But the other route that I would love to see Caleb hit is just like a nine ball every once in a while, because it feels like at some point defenses are going to start to be like, he never throws it.
He hit one against the Bengals to DJ, and I believe he hit one against the Ravens also to DJ. I would like to see more deep shots down the sidelines.
I'm not talking like, you know, Michael Penix levels, Jalen Hurts levels, like just focus on that.
Yeah, we'll get.
It's just at some point defenses are going to say, here are two things Caleb isn't going to do, right? The same way they do with Hurts, and they say, guess what? You aren't going to throw this pass. You know, you aren't going to do this. As long as he's layering all these things in, or maybe it's the case that Ben Johnson is just saying, hey, what if I don't show this for a couple of weeks if I don't need to? And then the next week, over and over again.
It was funny, the first couple of weeks of the season, you know, like Caleb wasn't necessarily throwing in breakers with a ton of anticipation. So there was a lot of deep out routes and stuff. Yeah. And they haven't thrown those as much lately. So Caleb has, over the last 4 or 5 weeks, they actually said it on the broadcast this week. It was nice to have Greg Olson on the broadcast because he was actually pretty positive about Caleb for once. For first time in a week, we're not bitching about the broadcast having a vendetta against the kid. And I especially love when Greg singled out and praised Caleb for hitting that backside dig, you know. But Caleb has been the most efficient quarterback in the NFL on throws over the intermediate and deep middle of the field. And that's the Ben Johnson bread. And that was the thing that was one of the question marks people had coming. If you talk about all the question marks people had about Caleb entering the season, you know, the biggest one was sacks. Can he avoid getting sacked into oblivion? Asked and answered there. Yep. The middle of the field. People like, that's a big part of the Ben Johnson offense. Caleb didn't necessarily love throwing middle of the field, which, first of all, I always thought that was an overblown concern, because I think I looked at Caleb threw intermediate and deep center, I want to say like 10% on like 11% of his throws last year, or maybe 9 to 10%, which isn't a lot. Like, I think Jared Goff, who is, you know, is the most middle of the field loving dude in the NFL, I think he's like 14-15% generally. But at the same time, it's not that bad, especially for rookies. Like, people, Jalen Hurts in his career has thrown to that area of the field like 6% of the time. So, like, even as a rookie, when people were saying, Caleb can't see the middle of the field, doesn't like to throw, he was still already throwing middle of the field as a rookie more than, like, a Russell Wilson or a Jalen Hurts does.
Yeah.
And this year, he's at, I think, 13, 14% that area of the field. He's been super efficient to that area of the field. So, I think now that they have really established that willingness and that dominance, frankly, over the middle of the field, you might see defenses start to go back to some of the coverages they were showing early in the year that left those outbreakers more open. And I, you know, cause it's a push and pull. So hopefully we will start to see some of those sideline bombs. Everyone loves those.
That's my hope. Oh man, speaking of the middle of the field, man, when I was watching this back on the All 22, I spent a little time just watching Colston Loveland because I was like, wow, he's like doing really well. He's getting open. I'm really pleased with this guy.
That's rare dude. I was glad. Yeah. Like, no knock on Jalen Warren. I never disliked Jalen Warren, but they're two very different tight ends, and Colston is so much younger and is,
Tyler
is
Warren.
A true inline. What did I say?
Jalen Warren.
Jalen. Oh, that's the
Steelers. We're watching the Eagles. Yeah, I understand.
Tyler Warren. But, like, Colston, that's the separation that guy can get, the route running, that's a rare dude, guys.
It is.
He's going to be... I don't know if it's going to be by the end of this year. You know, he's made some blocks. He's
There are still some plays where you can tell he doesn't quite know what he's doing. But that's a rare dude there. That's gonna be a big player. One.
So he's running a play and he's wide open for about 9 yards and he's got room to run. And I'm like, oh, did Caleb miss him on this play? And then Caleb fires it over his head, over another guy's head down the middle, and this is that pass to Rome that went for about 30 yards. And I was like, I literally like quivered. I quivered in my seat like he turned down what probably 15 easy yards to the tight end for a 30-yard pass to Rome over a linebacker over the middle of the field. Like, we've never had anything approaching this dude. Like, yeah. this is the guy. In your weeks before, like I've said, I don't want to talk about Caleb so much. I want to talk about the rest of the team. But I, like, what can you say about a dude who does that? You know?
Yeah, it's funny because I think the beat sometimes confuses. You know, they're always I always say this about the Bears beat a lot. They're always fighting the last war, and I think there's a lot of Justin Fields specific scars in the fan base and the media right now. And it's like whenever Caleb maybe makes a more risky throw downfield, and it's usually not risky, but it's just a more difficult throw downfield, and you see a guy in the flat or whatever. There's people talk about it like it's a turn down or whatever. I'm like, that's not a turn down, guys. Like the turn down is the Justin Fields thing where he's looking at his primary read. It's open and he just doesn't throw it. He can't trigger it. That's a turn down, and that really concerns you because it tells you that the guy's processor's not working. He's not playing on time. He's not, for whatever reason. Turndowns are very concerning. Caleb Williams, there's really not a whole lot of turndowns on the tape. There's one specifically in this game that was on his game-winning touchdown run, and he looks right at Zacchaeus, and he's like, sorry, pal, I can't trust you.
I wanted to talk about that last play, too, but it was verified post-game. That was not a pass. There was no pass option on that play.
Oh, really?
It's a designed run, and you can tell because Kmet actually identifies that he has to block early, so he's blocking downfield already.
Okay, well, that's good.
Which I wanted to point out because I have spent most of this podcast talking about this because we had Justin Fields at first, and then we moved on to Caleb. We talked about this with Jaden Daniels, right? And it's that ball knowledge, the knowledge of the game, not just how to run your play and what you're supposed to do on it, but why. Right. And Justin Fields would screw up screen passes. And it would make me so fucking mad because he would take too long. And if you wait too long, your blockers can't block because that's a penalty if they're blocking downfield, or they don't block. And then the play gets blown up. Jaden Daniels does the same thing on an RPO. He'll pump fake on an RPO and then pass it. Oops, sorry. Ineligible receiver downfield, because that's how the play works. And Jaden doesn't understand that. He just knows these are the things I could do. Coach says, if I do this, you know, like the play is good success. But Caleb is on this play, and Caleb and Oz make eye contact while he's running. And Oz and him are both thinking like, nobody covered me. And I don't know why, like, but this is an easy touchdown for me. But Caleb looks down just a little bit at Cole, and he's like, well, he's already blocking, so I've got to run. I have to do the actual play. So the thought was there, but he is too smart to make that mistake, because Oz wasn't open for a touchdown. He was open for a penalty.
Yeah, spatial awareness, very important. But no, Caleb doesn't really have a lot of turn downs, or you don't see him just like staring at dagger and not throwing it. He fucking loves throwing dagger, folks. That kid loves throwing that dig route, and I love that about him. We have not seen that in Chicago since Cutler and Martz. But he will occasionally see his check down and ignore it and try to make a play 30 yards downfield. And I'm not saying it's right every time that he does that. You're going to have to live with that, because you know what? Mahomes will often do the same thing. Josh Allen will do the same thing. These guys ain't come here to play check down. And now there's situational times where you do, like against the Ravens, when he threw that interception, that's a play where it's like, Caleb, just take the check down there, man. Cause it's first down. But like, there's third down plays. I distinctly remember he got criticized against the Saints, where it's like, he had so-and-so open, right? And I'm like, there's 40 seconds left on the clock. They have one timeout. If he takes that check down there, they get maybe 10 yards and they waste 20 seconds doing it. Like, that's why he's not throwing it. That's not a turn down. Stop calling those turn downs. It drives me insane. Travis, did you see Jalen Hurts just also miss that glance route? Did you see that? Did you just notice that?
I see he nailed the middle of the field, but only because that dude was standing there wide open for 2 seconds. And then this next pass, he overthrew this guy on the same route, but with anticipation.
Well, there we go.
We've hit the part of the game where Jalen sighs deeply and decides he has to throw it over the middle of the field. Guys, it is 0-0 in an Eagles-Packers game on Monday night. I thought this was going to be fun.
Yeah, no.
We got to talk about the Jordan defense, Cal.
Jordan Love fumbles. Talk about the defense.
Can I ask you a question about this defense?
Go for it.
How many of these motherfuckers, like, would you keep if you were building a defense? Like, if you had half of an NFL team's budget, how many of these dudes would you keep on their current contracts? Because I think for me, the list is like Booker, CJ Gardner-Johnson, Jervon. I think Jervon is totally cromulent.
Yeah, on his current contract, I'd keep Jervon. I'm not sure that I think Sweat is necessarily bad on his current contract as DE2. But God, I would get rid of Grady Jarrett and every Dio Odeng and every other friggin' defensive lineman that they're paying, and Tremaine Edmonds and TJ Edwards. I would get rid of all of them so I could have that money to pay a real defensive end to be defensive end number one.
How obvious was it at the time of signing that Dio Odengbo and Grady Jarrett was just stupid and awful? And like, the Falcons got rid of Grady Jarrett, a franchise player, a guy who has like an outside shot at the Hall for that team. Like, what does that tell you? Like, when the Bears got rid of Brian Urlacher, nobody else was trying to bring that guy in, right? That should, why you, and to give him that contract, Dio Odengbo, a guy who, like, we hate it when you draft a guy who hasn't produced in college. Dio Odengbo, a guy who's never produced in the damn NFL, and you're going to give him that deal, and now he's out with an injury. Here comes our fourth round pick. Finally, he's not inactive. Maybe he'll get some playing time. Injured. Immediately, he's out of the game. Yeah. What a horrendous group of signings and draft picks.
We had some praise for Noah Sewell when he was playing earlier in the year. He was absolutely dog shit yesterday. Absolutely, completely lost on every single play in coverage.
Useless.
I mean, and you did see a difference in the defense when TJ Edwards in there. He's slow. He gets lost in coverage a lot, but at least he knows where he's supposed to be in coverage. Yeah. And he's a smart, instinctual player against the run. And Sewell is fast, but he's not smart or instinctual. So, yeah, I mean, maybe this whole unit looks better if we get Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon back. But you know how we both feel at this point about relying and waiting on those two to ever be healthy. But this is why I don't understand. Neither one of us can understand why anytime I say something negative about Ryan Poles on Twitter, there's still somebody I got to fucking block, because they're just like, he's our best GM in Bears in the last 20 years for the Chicago Bears, blah, blah, blah. He picked Caleb Williams when he had the number one overall pick. He's a genius, just like Ryan Grigson. Why does this guy have shooters, man? You had four. I understand. I'll give you a pass on not winning until this year. I really will. If you want to argue that you didn't have your coach and you didn't have your QB and you had to wait till this year to have all those, that's fine. But you should have turned over a near perfect roster to that coach. There should not be holes up and down this roster. You have had so much time, so much money, so many picks. This should be just a ready to dominate roster that you turned over to Ben Johnson to kick ass and take names. And instead it's a patchwork job. And every single win we get is like pulling teeth. And it comes entirely from Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams and Dennis Allen occasionally pulling rabbits out of the hat.
Even the victories he had this offseason, you know, getting Joe Tooney for a 5th round pick, Jonah Jackson for a 6th round pick, who's been fine. And for a 6th round pick, who fucking cares, right? Like, even, and Drew Dolman signing him to a big deal. He's been really solid. Well, all three of those guys, like, how about this? Why did you have to waste draft capital and money on these guys when you've had all this time to fill in interior line positions? One of the easiest things to draft and fill, and you couldn't do it. You had to do it exactly this offseason because you failed over and over and over again to get Ryan Bates is on this fucking team. I feel like I forget that every week. I'm like, holy shit, Ryan Bates is on this team still. that guy was supposed to be like the solution. Remember that, everybody? Oh, Ryan Bates, we traded. We got Ryan Bates. That's going to be great. He's just a backup. He can't even get on the field because Ryan Poles, he's screwed up like everything that he has touched. Everything that he has that is good was either obvious or like with Darnell, he might be an all-pro right tackle. He might be the best right tackle in the league right now. And even that came at the cost of Jalen Carter, of literally getting away from Jalen Carter, who has the second best pass rush win rate of any defensive tackle in the league right now.
Right, so, and I want to clarify, neither one of us is saying that he should have taken Carter over Darnell.
No, I think he should have taken Darnell.
At the time,
but
we were already mad that he had pigeonholed him into himself into a place where even when Jalen Carter fell into their laps, they couldn't take him because they needed a right tackle.
We had no right tackle on
the
roster.
And that's the thing about Poles, is it's like even the good moves are basically getting a dollar for a dollar. And as a GM, you need like five or six moves at least where you got a dollar for a quarter or less. Like you need to find value. And arguably he did for a little bit in Braxton Jones, but otherwise there's not a lot of that. There's not anything. Maybe if Austin Booker breaks out and becomes some dude, maybe if Dom Robb comes back and the two of them together turn out to be a tandem of really cool pass rushers, maybe there. But like, there's really not a lot of that. He's gotten the 10th overall pick in Darnell Wright has performed like the 10th overall pick. The 9th overall pick in Roman Dunze has performed like the 9th overall pick. Colston Loveland looks like a player, but again, he might not even be able to perform like the 10th overall pick because he's a tight end. Like, and that's tough for any tight end to do. But he's not found value anywhere else.
Yeah,
so it's
Jaquan
tough.
Brisker, you're whatever. You're a second round pick, and you're okay.
You're an okay
safety. Kyler Gordon can't get on the fucking field because he's hurt all the time.
Jaquan Brisker is the kind of guy that if you found him in the 5th round, you'd like they did with Adrian Amos back in the day, you'd be like, holy shit, great pick. But it is a second rounder. It's like, well, yeah, this is what you should be doing at a minimum. So
even the draft haul, which turned out to be insane. Like, you know, you look at all the players the Bears got, and Tyreek had a bad start to this game, but he looked really good later on. I hope he's working himself back into form. Fingers crossed on that. But like, you know, yeah, Caleb Williams, Darnell Wright, Tyreek Stevenson, like an insane haul. DJ Moore, even at his, you know, as he's falling out of favor at this point. But even that, you look at what we got in return, it's like, that's probably what you expect for 1-1, right? That kind of return. Like, he didn't get more than I expect. He didn't get less than I expected, but it was still like, exactly what you expect for that pick.
Friend of the pod, Nick, the Packer fan. He, you know, he's right about Ryan Poles. He always says like, it's like even his good moves are like, yeah, okay, that's about what you should expect for that. There's really nothing where you can be like, wow, what a win, what a shocking upset that he found this guy here. Yeah. So,
and this, anyway, that's where it's got us, a bunch of signings on defense. We have such an expensive defense. It is insane.
This is the fifth most expensive defense in football. And look what they are. So, I guess we told people we weren't going to turn this into the Ryan Poles episode because they won, but we sprinkled a little bit of in there for you guys.
Everything comes back to that, you know?
All right. So with about 10 minutes left here, Travis, I did want to, at the quarter season mark, we kind of touched on the second year quarterbacks and what everything was looking like then. I kind of want to do, we're a little past the half season mark now. I want to do a little update. Obviously, we know where we're feeling about Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
I think everybody knows what Drake May's doing. So, you know, I want to say for the Scottcast, when it comes to the 2024 draft class, still feel that the two best quarterbacks in that class are the two best quarterbacks in that class. And wouldn't you know it, the 22-year-olds who had normal, rough rookie seasons are the ones who are growing exponentially in year two.
Mm-hmm.
And the 25-year-olds with 8,000 college reps, none of them are better this year than they were last year. At best, they're the same. Jaden Daniels, I think, even if you wanted to argue before he got hurt, he was still good. He certainly wasn't as good as he was last year.
Yep.
He certainly wasn't improving in any way. He was regressing in several. And if you don't want to take that from me, you can take it from Kurt Warner. But also, he got hurt, just like we said he would. And then you have – did you watch that Raiders-Broncos game, Travis? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I fucking did. Because I'm a fucking sicko.
Exactly. And that's – it's so funny. Like, I talked about this where I get a little tired of people being so EPA-pilled, because I think EPA is useful, but, like, I think – Sometimes it's important to zoom out and like look at like a multi-year view. And I feel like all those EPA charts, they're so in the moment. They're, you know, through week 10, through this, blah, blah, blah. I think some, like, Bo Nix is a guy that you almost need to get historical perspective with, because I pointed this out. He is among all quarterbacks with at least 800 pass attempts since the year 2000. So in this century, he has the third lowest yards per completion of any quarterback with that many attempts. Just legendarily cowardly quarterbacking from Bo Nix is what's happening. Like, this man, the other two names on the list, there's three. The other two are Shane Matthews. Bears fans should remember that guy and what it should tell you if you're getting his. And the other guy's Bryce Young, hilariously, who's also currently playing, and that goose is cooked. But yeah, Bo Nix is just, he's so cowardly. Kurt Warner actually was saying today, it's like he's like, sometimes I watch him during his drop back and I can tell he's already going to just start running as soon as he's fit. He doesn't even wait to finish his drop back before he just starts scrambling and moving. He's just constantly spooking himself in clean pockets. It's hilarious.
Yeah. Bo Nix is so clearly bad when you watch him that the Broncos are 8-2 right now. And still, before a Thursday night football broadcast, and then during the broadcast, the announcers, Ryan Fitzpatrick, you know, breaking things down, they can't say shit nice about him. It's all, this is a problem. Like, this guy, ooh, he doesn't always do what Sean Payton wants. He's kind of a loose cannon. You know, that, like, just damning him with faint praise at best, and at worst, just like, this guy is a huge issue. He's just not good. Like for a guy who everybody should really want to praise, just given everything around him at this point and what he looks like, and I don't want to go too deep into it, but he's definitely a guy who's set up for people to like him, even if he's bad. They still can't do it because he's so clearly ass. Yeah. And it's so funny, because like I hated him so much. I still can't understand why anybody would have drafted him. And Sean Payton was so smug about how he tricked Minnesota into taking
him. He had a football and a Bible in his backpack.
Travis. That's right.
That's why. It's so funny because like he's literally just Mitch Trubisky. Like it's 2019 Mitch, and you can just watch it happen to another team. In real time, it's really funny too, because I thought and Sean Payton deserves this hell because he made it for himself, and like you said, he was so smug about it. But it's so funny to hear Bronco. I thought Sean Payton had enough clout that he would escape this, but no. Broncos fans immediately did it's the play caller's fault. They're like, why doesn't Sean Payton ever run anything but all these wide receiver screens and go balls and quick hitters to the flat? It's like, he is calling other stuff. That's what your quarterback is throwing.
That's because who Bo Nix is.
That's because he's an idiot. Yeah, like it's so funny. Yeah, it's just JP Acosta, a cool guy I follow on Twitter. He was talking about that Raiders game, and he was like, this game is literally just Geno Smith trying to survive the literal demons from hell on the Broncos defensive line while Bo Nix scares himself in a clean pocket. And that was really just
if Geno Smith was on the Denver Broncos right now, they might be Super Bowl favorites. But they have Bo Nix, so nobody believes him.
Yeah, it's and that's funny too, because I saw Broncos fans that were like, "We're 8-2. Why doesn't anyone believe in us? How could we not be a top ranked in the top 10?" It's because everyone but you sees through your quarterback right now, guys. Everyone but you, like we all see it.
This just moving isn't on work. Yeah,
yeah. Moving on from Nix to Penix. 4 weeks later, same fucking guy, man.
Yep.
Noticeably. He is still it's my favorite thing about Michael Penix is that I see a lot of people being like, why don't the Falcons get him under center more? Why don't they do more under center play action, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why do they use the pistol at the same rate that they did when Kirk Cousins was in here? And I'm like, it's because his knees are as old as Kirk Cousins. It's because he's had three knee surgeries. He can't bend. Watch that kid try to move. It hurts your fucking eyes.
It's just not what he does. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just not what he does. And I mean, did you see? So in that game against the Colts in Berlin, he fucking had a adjusted completion percentage. Now for folks in adjusted completion percentage, PFF tracks it. It's your completion percentage if you add back in, or if you exclude dropped passes, intentional throwaways, batted passes, or passes where the guys hit as spikes, and passes where the guys hit as he threw. A very normal adjusted completion percentage is anything in the 70s, anything below 70s concerning. Michael Penix's adjusted completion percentage for that game against the Colts was 58%. His actual completion percentage was 42.9%. It was like 11 of 28, 12 of 28. He's just – and so many of those misses were – they weren't under duress. They were just from a clean pocket just dirting the ball because he's got that long, loopy delivery. If the space gets condensed at all, he can't throw it. He refuses to throw. He's scared of the middle of the field still. And again, he's shown – zero signs of progress. And that's the problem with these older prospects, is they come to the league, they're fully cooked. Drake May is growing every week. Caleb's growing every week. These are guys who, if they had stayed in as long as Penix, Nix, Daniels, etc., they would still have two more years in college at this point. And they're in their second year in the NFL and they're growing. And these guys, they're stagnating. Penix is stagnating, just like Nix. It's just there's nothing there.
Who could have predicted it, Kyle? Like, who before this season could have said, hey, these guys aren't going to develop? Who before they were drafted said, hey, yeah, these guys, they might have a good first season because they're fully developed, but right, they will never get better, and they will likely take a step back as defenses learn their
It was a rough year last year as these rookie years played out, and nobody wanted to listen to me. I took a lot of shit on Twitter. You know, some people, so to everyone who kept their faith in me, in us, you know, never wrong, just early. That's where we're at. All these.
I'm not usually vindictive about these things. I'm usually like, well, that's kind of the case. But man, you caught a lot of shit about this Jaden Daniels stuff.
Oh yeah, no, like, I mean that's you caught
some stuff.
I got fucking. That. I have been talking about quarterbacks, and some of it's, I guess, that my Twitter following has gone up over the last couple of years. You know, I kind of caught a little bit of growth or whatever, and I don't really care about that. Because I honestly prefer it to just be my personal soapbox, but I have talked about a lot. The spreadsheet's been around for 10 years at this point almost. I've talked a lot about a lot of quarterback prospects, things I found interesting. Well, I was particularly adamant before the 2022 draft. I was like, I cannot believe that Kenny Pickett is getting first round buzz. This is one of the least talented quarterback prospects I've ever seen get talked about like this. It'll be a disaster.
Yeah.
Nobody got that mad about that. Jaden Daniels, from the minute I started talking about him, I got the most insane shit. I got death threats. So it's like, I don't want to root against Jaden Daniels as a person, but I do want Washington Commanders fans to suffer forever. And you sure are right now, aren't you guys? Your team sucks. It really does. It's fucking horrible. And you are miserable. And you have no real path forward because you traded all of your draft picks for a bunch of fucking 40-year-olds. How's Deebo Samuel looking, by the way?
Went, you know, all in on you a went all in phantom season from
all in on a phantom
merchant.
Season with a milquetoast defensive coordinator as your head coach.
Fucking Cliff Kingsbury's gonna get the fuck out of there if he's smart. He's gonna leave. Jaden Daniels is gonna have an offensive coordinator who's going to try to get him to do something. Fucking wait,
it's gonna be great. So yeah, no, it's fun to be vindicated there. And you know, this last one, I think, Travis, I guess we'll have to see, because we'll have to see how it goes Sunday. We can't talk too much shit yet. We got to get our revenge on 9, on J.J. McCarthy, number 9, feral personality that takes over and throws multiple interceptions a game.
It's such a badass alternate personality.
He's so badass. He's number that the man, that kid is so that is like one of those things that like the divorced dads on Facebook say that aren't allowed to have custody of their kids, you know, like that's JJ McCarthy's what that heard that saw that, like, you know, when you see those like t-shirts that's got like a skull on it and it's like a quote, you can buy them at a gas station gift shop.
It's like one of those guys who's like in the National Guard but was never deployed but is like always wearing fatigues or something. Yeah.
JJ McCarthy saw one of those t-shirts that said, like, the devil whispered, you're not ready for the storm. And yes, I whispered back, I am the storm. JJ McCarthy read that and was like, that's the coolest fucking shit I've ever heard, man. That's what it's like when I take the field. I said I didn't know what JJ McCarthy was because he didn't get to play enough. And I said in the spreadsheet, He could be literally anything. His closest comps, he could be literally anything from Zach Wilson to Kirk Cousins. And you were like, I don't think this is an NFL quarterback. I just don't. I don't see it at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, time will tell. It's still early for 9, but so far, looking like you're going to win that one.
So. I got to tell you, though, I just thought, like, physical tools-wise, I was like, this guy is not going to make it. He can't make – he literally can't make NFL throws, and I don't think they understand this. I did not expect to open the J.J. McCarthy box and get Johnny Manziel out of there.
Yeah, I – yeah, the – goddamn. You didn't expect to get 9. You
weren't prepared. I didn't expect 9.
You weren't ready for 9.
I thought I should have known because, like, him and Harbaugh really got along, so I should have known 9 was in there.
I wish this was one of the years that we actually had a Bears defense, because, man, I wish I was confident that they were going to hand 9 his ass this weekend. But I will say, regardless of what happens, it will not be changing my opinion of 9, probably just my opinion of Dennis Allen. But
absolutely.
Yeah, that's 9. Oh, God, please beat 9. Please do not get swept by 9.
We need an NFC North win. That's what's missing. That's here,
what we
right?
Need. That's what we need. Yeah, I think, I mean, if they beat the Vikings on Sunday, we'll be up turning that worm all night long.
God damn right. We're going to turn everybody's worm.
Turn the worm around.
I'm watching this shit fest, and I'm thinking we could probably beat the Packers. All right. Like, this is garbage. So,
well, bear in mind that Philadelphia does have a good defense in Vic Fangio. So
they haven't been that great this year, but yes, they do have Vic Fangio. But oh my God. I mean, I watch Packers Panthers. I watched that whole game too, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. This is a miserable offense. Matt LaFleur needs to be put on trial for what he's done here, but we'll get to the Packers later in the season.
Yeah, there'll be time for that. All right. Well, let's hope it's 7-3 next week when we're here, folks. Need that victory over the Vikings.
Goddamn right.
See ya. Way out that bumper's road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago, and people I sure do hate to go. Now you know I'm leaving.